Welcome to the podcast. I am Chris Graham and Jerry. We've got so much to dive into. Let's call this our pre-April Fool's Day edition because if for a lot of UVA fans, and we'll start with basketball, a lot of UVA fans probably feel like it's been April Fool's Day all week with the transfer news that pops up every day. We're recording this podcast about 1 o'clock on Wednesday. As of 1 o'clock on Wednesday, no additional names added from UVA. We'll hope that's the case. But Jerry, man, this has just been a wild week for basketball news.
It really has. And, you know, I think most of us who follow Virginia closely kind of expected at least one or two guys to enter the transfer portal. I can't say that I'm shocked by any of the three that did, Marcel, McCoy, and Abdul Rahim. There seemed to be little telltale signs here and there throughout the season that maybe they weren't the most satisfied guys in the world in terms of their roles and playing time. And that, to me, normally about 90% of the people that transfer, that's usually what it boils down to, is they're not happy with their role or their playing time or both. And it's a wild Tony mentioned the other day that the NCAA didn't like him to refer to it as the Wild West, but that's what it's turned into. And I don't know that there's a program in the country that hadn't been impacted at some point.
I'm looking at the number right now. The verbalcommits.com website is what I use to keep up. In fact, there have been two new names added, but not from Virginia, in the last 4 minutes since we started getting ready to record this podcast. There are 1,078 names right now in the transfer portal. 357 Division I teams. That's a little over three per team. So Virginia is right on average as far as that goes. Yeah, Wild West. It's a free agent market. And with the weird pandemic year also factoring in, I mean, one, you know, the cohesiveness, we talked about that with Barry Parkhill when we talked with him last week. It was hard to get a sense of culture and cohesiveness this year because the guys, you know, had to stay in their rooms. They had their food delivered to them. They weren't able to mingle, hang out like you normally can. Maybe that's a factor with, for example, maybe Abdur Rahim. He's a freshman, didn't get a chance to really get integrated in the culture very well. The other two guys, though, were sophomores, and you know, the playing time issue maybe bigger issue for them, but you know, the ability to declare yourself a free agent and immediately transfer and be eligible somewhere else. That's why we're seeing this explosion. I mean, an average of three per team, 1,078, and that number's going to grow. I'm sure it's going to get even higher.
Yeah, most likely. I mean, it would be interesting to see how much of a percentage that is of all the college basketball players in Division I, but I imagine it's a shocking number. But I would encourage Virginia fans not to panic. Just because you're UVA, it doesn't mean you're exempt to the transfer portal. It's just a fact of life these days. And, I've had people write me and ask if it was they were unhappy because of the COVID policies at UVA, that they, like you said, they couldn't mingle much. Do they sense that Tony's leaving because he's upset with cheating going on in college basketball and he's fed up and going to the NBA? I don't think it's any of that stuff. I think it just boils down to roles and playing time. That's all it is. And I think Tony and his staff are out there busting their hump right now, trying to find replacements, as good or better than the guys that left.
The quick math in my head, the 13 scholarships per team. Now, of course, there's walk-ons and things like that too. So if you add the extra couple walk-ons, if we're averaging three per team in the portal, just of the scholarship players available, you're talking about close to 25%. I mean, three out of 13 is like 22-23%. So wow. That's shocking when you put it in that perspective.
That's mind-boggling.
I'm also getting those requests, Jerry, from people. I had a good friend of mine who's a fellow UVA alum on a business trip to California. He had some time to kill last night, so it took me an hour to talk him down off the ledge. I was kind of like a defense attorney. I was ready. I had my arguments ready to go. I was pleading my case to the jury. And one of the things I want to get your perspective on, This, if you only look at 2021 and you say, okay, has Tony lost the team or is he looking to leave or anything like that? But in history of UVA basketball under Tony Bennett, we've actually had a couple of exoduses. That's a Latin word, so maybe exodi. the 2017 season, the season where, you know, that was Ty and Kyle Guy's freshman season. That team, you know, went 23-11 and got a 5 seed in the tournament. Mario Shayok transferred out. Darius Thompson transferred out. I think maybe there was maybe one other transfer. And then early in Tony's tenure, he had quite a few guys transfer out. Will Regan comes to mind, James Johnson, Billy Barron. And so this isn't the first time.
The kid that ended up at Auburn.
Yes.
It was a pretty good – I thought he was going to have a good future here. I'm trying
to – T.T. Harrell?
Yeah. I actually spent a day at his house with him and his family and high school AAU coach. I remember we actually won a national award because we went to there were six recruits and we went, they were from all over the country. We went to each one of them's hometown, spent a day or two there with them and their families. And we called it the six shooters. And we did a huge blowout on each player 6 days in a row in our newspaper. And it was a huge hit. And almost all the six shooters were gone within a year. Some of them left at Christmas time.
Yeah.
Including Harrell, which was somewhat of a surprise. And I think Akil Mitchell and Joe Harris were the only two that remained. And they turned out pretty good. But there's been a lot of exits over Tony's tenure.
And I could attribute that first group. You know, Tony was still establishing the culture at Virginia. You know, the guys who were being recruited maybe didn't understand just how hard it would be to play the pack line defense and the mover blocker offense. And, you know, Tony's system requires you to play hard every second. Some coaches, you know, you can kind of coast, you can, you know, do some things and then play hard at the end. But Tony's system, they play hard every possession, 30 seconds each possession. So you could say, okay, maybe those kids, they didn't know what they were getting into. They wanted to play somewhere else where it wasn't quite as hard. You know, the second group that left, Shayok, you know, his move to Iowa State helped him. He was able to, his offensive game flourished. Darius Thompson's actually playing professionally in Europe too. So maybe his situation improved too. But you know, I don't know. I said this to the college roommate from a few years ago last night. He's an engineer. I'm a writer. You know, if I was a freshman or sophomore in college and I looked out and saw a better engineering or writing program, you know, you only get to do it once. You know, you can't fault the kids for wanting to do what they think is in their best interest.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, gosh, I lost my train of thought there. I had something really good to say. It'll pop up in a minute. It's a senior moment, I guess. But
well, plus me filibustering like that. But
I know what it was now. And you know, these guys are they're inside the program, and they probably heard rumors and knew that Virginia was probably going after certain guys in the portal that have already entered the portal. Some of those guys played the same positions that they do. And so I'm sure if they were teetering on whether they should enter the transfer portal themselves, that might have been a factor in pushing them to jump in.
So let's break it down. And then also I want to get into, you had a really fascinating column that we posted last night on speculating on some guys that you're talking about that UVA might be interested in, have already made contact with. To me, the biggest loss just from now, and of course, in a month, we'll probably know the roster better when transfer moves are made and that kind of thing. But to me, right this second, the biggest loss is actually, it seems to be McCoy, just because you look at the post, the 4 and 5 positions for Virginia, with Jay Huff and Sam Hauser both graduating, and we'll assume that they're going to, you know, they could come back. Anybody can come back. Let's just assume they don't come back. And I think that's a safe assumption. I think Hauser's already declared that. I don't know if Huff has or not, but he's a fifth-year guy as well. Assume those guys are gone, and now with McCoy leaving, you know, that leaves right now guys with experience, and really maybe even just guys in general in the post, Francisco Cofaro and Caden Shedrick. you're really thin all of a sudden. I mean, you were thin anyway. If you, even with McCoy back, you've only got three guys to play two positions. But man, now that puts it, it's incumbent on Virginia. It's incumbent on Tony and the staff to find one or two guys to play in the post.
Yeah, that's true. And Shedrick missed a lot of the season this past year for had some illnesses and stuff. And I'm sure that didn't help advance his game any. And so he'll have to work hard in the offseason to meet his expectations. But, yeah, you're exactly right. I think McCoy of those three is the biggest loss because of his potential. He started to come on a little bit toward the end of the season, got some decent minutes, made a difference in a couple of games. And I'm sure had he been available at Ohio for the Ohio game in the first round of the NCAA, I think he would have made a difference in that game as well, because they needed a size would have been to their Virginia's advantage. And so, yeah, I think he is the biggest loss of those three. Casey just seemed to struggle with finding his offense. You know, he was a good shooter in high school, but it just didn't translate to college. And it's mystifying why, but it just never did. And maybe he lost confidence. I don't know. But Abdul Rahim, I had him on my radio show shortly after he committed, and he talked about how he liked to play defense. I don't know if he ever totally grasped the pack line or not, but I don't know. We didn't see much of him. We obviously, because of COVID, we couldn't see him in practice. So we really don't know what was going on in that process, but he was a freshman, didn't get many minutes at all. And I'm assuming that that was one of the factors in his decision to leave.
And, you know, you see people on social media, the message boards, hey, this kid was, top 30 national recruit. Why didn't Tony play anymore? You mentioned, Jerry, we didn't get to see him in practice. We didn't get to, and we certainly didn't see him in games. He got garbage time minutes in just a few games. You have to presume that Tony and Jason Williford and the staff, they saw him every day. And they're going to put the best players out there. This was not a situation where you're redshirting a guy because everybody could redshirt this year. So, I just have to presume if he didn't get minutes, they determined he hadn't earned them.
Yeah. If you're not playing in games, usually it's because, you're not getting the job done in practice. And it's simple as that. No secrets or anything. You know that Tony and those guys are going to play the best guys they can because they want to win. And, you win by playing your best people, and it's hard to keep everybody happy. There's no question about that. It was a very deep team, but there's only so many minutes to go around. And if you're a freshman, you're kind of the low man on the totem pole, unless you're just exceptional. And obviously that wasn't the case.
Update, another name, a kid from Wyoming added to the transfer portal as we've been talking. So 1,079 now. I'll keep doing that as we do the podcast today. it grows. And so, yeah, let's talk about your column from last night then. The headline, provocative, and it was great, just the speculation, because that's all we can do now is speculate and inform speculation in some cases. But Walker Kessler is a person who's on a lot of minds of Virginia fans right now, among the others. Jerry, break down. Okay, first, Walker Kessler, the Carolina big who is transferring out of there. ACC has lifted its rule that had been in place for many years, not allowing in-conference transfers. So that opens up the possibility of Kessler coming to a Virginia or anywhere else in the ACC. And then maybe some of the other names that are out there as well that Virginia's interested in.
Yeah, well, you know, he was a five-star coming out of high school in Georgia, a big man who he can be physical. He can play with his back to the basket. But I think the reason, from what I've gathered from talking to some of my Carolina insiders, is that the reason he left the Tar Heels is because he wanted to be more of a stretch four or a stretch five, to where he could shoot three at will. He's a pretty good shooter. I think they wanted him to be more of a physical inside guy. And so he could step into that role that Jay Huff had, really. He didn't get a lot of numbers as a freshman, but he did have some rather spectacular games, but he averaged about 4.5 points, 3.5 rebounds a game. Virginia was originally one of the schools he strongly considered. He came here for a visit, not knowing what Tony might be expecting of him had he signed with Virginia. He did not want to be a Jack Salt physical set screens kind of guy. He wanted to, again, he wanted to be an offensive force. He loved the fact that Virginia played defense and the fact that they were, I think he was at one of the Virginia, he was at one of his visits. His visit was with one of the Virginia games where they had 3 or 4 shot clock violations on the other team, and something that he pointed out and really liked. So I know Tony told him he could be more of a DeAndre Hunter, Jay Huff type guy. And that seemed to be to his liking. How Carolina got him to change his mind and come there, I don't know, not privy to that. But, it came down for him at the time to Virginia, Carolina, Duke, Michigan, and Vanderbilt. I'm sure that his list of suitors is much longer now. But we hear that Gonzaga might be involved, but they're not going to take anybody until their season's over. So which unless he's interested in going there and is very patient, he might want to pull the trigger before next weekend's Final Four. But he would be a huge addition for Virginia. He would fit perfectly in on the court, off the court, academically. He's exactly the kind of guy they need, along with maybe another big who's physical that can take a little of that pressure off of him. And we heard this morning, or actually last night, late last night after I posted the column, it's too late to get it on, but we heard that Tony Bennett had a virtual meeting yesterday with Jaden Gardner of East Carolina. He's a 6'7", 6'8", physical forward, averaged 18 points a game, 8.3 rebounds, was about a 50% shooter from the field. He was second in the AAC in scoring, rebounding, and minutes played. He's the eighth leading scorer in East Carolina history, and he's wasn't done with his career. He was also among the leaders in the conference in offensive rebounding, field goal percentage, and free throw percentage. And for those that don't know the AAC, that's the same conference that Houston, Cincinnati, Memphis, and Wichita State are in. So we know that NC State has offered him. Florida, Virginia Tech, Miami, Pitt, Arkansas, and others are in pursuit, as well as Virginia. So the fact that Tony had a virtual meeting with him yesterday, it's probably at least a good sign that he's listening.
Yes, 6'7" or 6'8", 240 pounds. I think I counted it up. He shot 6 three-pointers all season. He's a post guy. Shoots 55%. He had 21 points and 15 rebounds in a win over Houston for ECU back earlier in the season, that Final Four team that we're talking about there. So, yeah, big good numbers and a good conference. And a guy that, boy, if you're wish listing Threaten right now, you put him at your four, or maybe make him your five, actually, and let a Walker Kessler come in and be your 7'4". You know, the Kessler thing, I can understand when he was in high school, you know, if you get people in your ear saying, if you go to Virginia, you're just going to set screens. You know, you're not going to do anything except for set screens and get rebounds. And then you go to Carolina, though. I mean, if you're thinking you're going to be a Jay Huff type player, and so many guys now, you know, NBA loves big guys who can shoot threes. They'll turn a guy who's not a three-point shooter in college into a three-point shooter. Brooke Lopez comes to mind. He's developed a three-point shot and a pretty good three-point game in the NBA. You go to Carolina, I mean, dating back to Dean Smith, Roy Williams does the same thing. You put big guys under the basket and you throw them the ball and they shoot the ball from 5 feet, and that's what you do. So, now Tony has – I'm thinking kind of like an approximation of – When Bryce Perkins had the two great seasons at quarterback for Virginia, that showed future recruits. here's how Virginia wants to play offense with a quarterback. We want to have a mobile quarterback who can throw. And so now you're going to recruit those kind of guys because they can say, that's the model. I want to be Bryce Perkins. Well, now Virginia could point to Jay Huff and say, we don't just have centers and forwards who set screens. We have guys, both Huff and Hauser, big guys who can shoot. And we'll let them have the freedom on offense if they do what they need to do defense and rebounding wise. So maybe that's got Kessler thinking a little bit as well.
It could be. And I would think that of all the schools pursuing him, I would think he would have to give Virginia very strong consideration, especially considering he did the first time around. We also know that Florida transfer Noah Locke, 6'3", junior guard, has told people that he has heard from Virginia, but he has a really long list of people pursuing him as well. He came to Florida as a 4-star and over 3 years averaged around 10 points a game. He is, speaking of mass exodus, Florida lost 4 players in 3 days. He was one of them. He's heard from a bunch of ACC schools, including UVA, NC State, Louisville, Carolina, and Clemson. And then on the national level, UCLA, Kansas, Alabama, and many more. So that's another name to keep an eye on. And it was interesting that we heard a rumor tying Kessler to the Powell kid down at Auburn, who is a guard and was one of the couple of guys that left that program. Those two are really close friends, and there was a rumor out there that they might come to Virginia or Kentucky as a package deal, but I don't think Kentucky is interested in that because they just got the kid from Davidson that Virginia and everybody else wanted, Kellen Grady. So, and I don't think they need a center. I don't think so. It'll be interesting to see if there was any truth to that rumor or not, but Justin Powell is his name, and it'll be fun to see. There's several other guys' names that we've heard, including Cincinnati transfer Terry Eason, 6'8 forward, 7.3 points, 5.9 rebounds per game, 46% shooter. I know Arizona, Virginia Tech, Pitt, Washington, and Washington State are in the mix. He's from Seattle, even though he was born in Virginia. And then there's another kid. The Pitt kid, Marion Jones, a junior forward. Guard, transfer guard. He was one of 5 guys that left Penn State's program.
Yeah.
He shot a team high 39% from the 3-point line and was the team's leading scorer. Pretty good shooter. It was honorable mention all Big Ten the last 2 seasons. So, that's a pretty solid list. I'm sure there's probably some others that we're not privy to because there's so many people out there and trying to find out names and what's going on in the recruiting part of the transfer portal is harder than trying to find out recruiting news out of high school ranks. But that's what we've been able to learn so far.
2 more names, kid from St. John's, kid from Norfolk State. We're up to 1,081. This is like watching a stock ticker. we could do this all day. This year, at least, unlike last year, I mean, this time last year, everybody was communicating by Zoom. We'll talk about football in a few minutes. But football teams were being held together by Zoom. Basketball, the season had been canceled. They were all over the world for months. You didn't have the normal spring work, summer work, the conditioning work, the work with Mike Curtis and the staff there to get better physically, strength and conditioning wise. Even then when they got back on grounds in August, it just wasn't the same. The hard part for Virginia with transfers is kind of what I mentioned before. You're asking players to come in and learn a really intricate defensive alignment, the pack line. The mover blocker offense is also something that's different from what a lot of teams use. And you don't have, you know, when you bring a transfer in and you plug them right in the lineup, you know, there can be issues there. But at least, you know, where we are with COVID, it seems like things are getting more normal every day. You could probably anticipate that this will be a more normal walk up to, you know, sprint through spring, summer, fall into October, the start of training camp. And so maybe that'll, you know, if there's four scholarships out there, plus the kid from New Zealand, Tane Murray, you know, that's time for them to develop that wasn't available last year.
Yeah, no question about it. With five scholarships, I don't know that Tony would try to fill all those, but the fact that they're available and, you know, there's going to be playing time for some of those people. I think that bodes well. It's interesting because you have to recruit all over again. The transfer portal has made it a new recruiting period. It's almost like free agency for the NFL. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. It's a weird process because there's no, you never know from one minute to the next who might pull the trigger. Like guys like Trey Murphy did it really quickly. Hauser took a little longer, I think, even though he had ties to Virginia before. So it's just so unpredictable. And, at any moment we could hear of a new guy that's dropped in on Virginia and committed. So, and it might drag out. So, hold on to your hats, Wahoo fans.
That's right.
It's going to be a wild ride the next week or two.
Keep up with JerryRatcliffe.com and AugustaFreePress.com because we're trying to keep up and help us all through this. There's a lot more postseason basketball. This reminds me of that 2017 offseason, honestly, in terms of all the activity. The busiest we've been after a season in a few years. And we have football. That's a segue. We actually have spring football to talk about. Practice started yesterday, as we're recording this on Wednesday. Spring practice. Virginia did not get spring practice last year. So this is a gift for the players and coaches and staff there. We've both, Jerry, have taken our first dives into looking ahead to 2021. What are your first impressions? We've had a chance to get on Zooms with Coach Mendenhall. We had Marcus Hagans on the other night on our podcast. What are your first impressions looking ahead to this coming fall season?
I have three initial thoughts, maybe four. I think Virginia's offense is going to be better than it was last year, even though they lost a couple of good receivers. I think it's going to be better. My big question mark is, can the defense come back? They've struggled at the end of the season the last 2 years with defense, almost all of last season, which was unexpected because they had like 18 guys back with starting experience. And they just never really got it done on that side of the ball, which was the biggest surprise and letdown to me. Can they fix that in the spring? And I guess the people overlook this, but they lost their punter and their kicker, and they were both pretty reliable guys for the most part. So that's up in the air. Bronco shed some light on that the other day, and he even brought a list to his to his podcast so he wouldn't forget who's fighting for the jobs. But I guess the other thing that really surprised me is something he said that before the nine returning seniors – with that extra year of eligibility, thanks to the COVID, before they could come back, that they had to prove to him personally that they were more passionate about football and helping this team than they ever had been. And there were some rather big names on that list, like Joey Blunt and who else was it?
I've got him. Yeah. Joey Blunt, Mandy Alonzo, Brown, Devontae Cross, Nick Grant, your two starting cornerbacks. So, yeah.
Yeah, a couple offensive linemen.
Yeah,
who had started for 2 years. That surprised me a little bit that those guys had to exhibit more passion toward football and toward helping the team get better. And apparently they did so with flying colors in the winter workouts. Some of them, like Joey Blunt, just blew Bronco away with some of the strength and numbers that he's piling up in the conditioning program. So those are my initial thoughts. How about yourself?
Well, and yeah, with Blunt, Bronco pointed out that, you know, Joey had not really been healthy in an offseason for, you know, until this year. He's always been dealing with injuries. So he actually had a healthy offseason to actually, instead of working on rehab, he was working on strength and conditioning. So he's in the best shape that he's been in all his years at Virginia. Yeah, you know, actually a couple things, Jerry. And one is a question you actually asked of Coach Mendenhall in the Zoom about the running game. And as I'll throw it back to you just for that sake. Because Bronco seems to think this year could be a breakthrough year for the running game.
Yeah, he confirmed that Mike Collins is one of the six players who opted out last season because of COVID are all back. And Hollins, we were all looking forward to Hollins last year before he did opt out because he had such a strong reputation coming out of Baton Rouge. As a power running back. And we saw a little bit of that his freshman year in a couple of games. Bronco doesn't like to play freshman running backs that much if he doesn't have to, because he thinks if things don't go great, that it can give them issues and confidence and things like that. So I think he's going to be a real strong addition to that backfield. And also Walker. Ronnie Walker is back, the kid from Georgia that put up like Herschel Walker type numbers in high school. His name escapes me at the moment. He is going to be in the backfield fighting for time. But if I recall, I think Bronco said to Wayne Talapapa, who has started all last season and the year before was a starter, I think, that nobody's been able to beat him out, in terms of everything they're looking for in the offseason. And I think it's going to be strong competition, and I think spring will probably prove that out. So I think it'll be a good running game. Plus, they got three running quarterbacks.
and he talked about how, you know, one, they've been creative. I think it was charitable way of putting it in terms of trying to get running yards with the lack of productivity from the tailbacks. Yeah, there were some things that Robert and I did last year. I mean, the Wildcat plays with Keaton Thompson and Ira Armstead before Armstead got injured, and Thompson just. He's everything. I mean, I loved his answer. I love Bronco's answer to a question, where are you going to play Keaton? And he went down the list of every position on the field, pretty much offensive and special teams. And he did everything, but say he's going to sell popcorn at halftime and say, we're going to check as many boxes with Keaton as we can. You also don't want to expose those guys too much. And so he talked about the need to develop that traditional running game. But yeah, Keaton Thompson is interesting. I mean, maybe last year's injury that kept him from playing, you know, competing for the quarterback job. He suffered a shoulder injury in camp. They had to use him the way they did in Wildcat plays, lining up in the slot, lining up a tight end, and running back in some situations. Bronco used a name. He referenced a name that I've been thinking about in terms of Keaton Thompson. He talked about Taysom Hill. And Keaton might actually may actually work out for him as far as his a potential NFL future, the way Virginia's used him last year and presumably this coming year.
Yeah, and his shoulder apparently has healed in the offseason. So he was asked if Keaton was going to throw the ball, and that was a definite yes. He's going to be throwing the ball. So with Armstrong back there as a dual threat, Keaton is a dual threat and Armstead is dual threat. That could give defenses some fits. And I expect all three of those guys to be better this year than they were a year ago. So that and a deeper running back position and an experienced offensive line returning. Now, some of these guys will be starting for like 3 years now. They could actually have a good running game for the first time in a long time. And if they can do that, then that's going to open up the passing game and make the quarterbacks even more dangerous. So I really do think this offense has a lot more potential than last year's did.
And one other factor that makes this offense gives this offense more potential is a guy who caught 20 passes last year.
Yeah.
And he didn't get, he had 42 targets in 8 games last year. So they didn't even try to throw it his way very much. But he's 6'7". He's usually about at least, well, he's at least 6'7", 8 inches taller than whoever's covering him. Lavelle Davis Jr. He's the kind of guy, he's got speed at 6'7". He's got good hands. And when you're 6'7" and the cornerback across from you, like Bronco said, is probably 5'10". You either have to have a linebacker under or a safety over. You got to commit two guys at least to his side of the field. That opens up the other receivers. It opens up the running game. It opens up the quarterback draws. It does everything. But one thing that Bronco talked about, Jerry, you asked this question too, so I'm going to let you talk about this more. But you asked the question, what do you got to do to get Lavelle Davis Jr. more involved?
Yeah, I wanted to see how they could expand his role, and Bronco immediately started laughing, and he said, it's simple, just throw him the ball more. He said, you know, he's 6'7", he's always open, so we got to just throw him the ball more, and that's right. I mean, I think he was only the fifth Division One or FBS player since 2000 to have more than 500 yards receiving or something like that on 20 catches or less. So that just shows you the potential in this guy. And you know, he missed a couple of games because of, I think, injury, and it may have been a concussion. And we think he was one of the guys that had COVID and missed one of the games. So, you know, he didn't even get come anywhere near reaching his potential just as a freshman. So I think the sky is the ceiling for this guy. And I mean, he blew us all away. We had, like you said, we had Marcus Higgins on our podcast the other night. And I asked him if he's the one that discovered Lavelle, because he was from a small town in South Carolina and wasn't getting a lot of publicity and notoriety. And Marcus and I have to give the credit to, was it Shane Hunter? I think
Shane Hunter, yeah, that's what he said.
And
yeah.
He kept urging him to look at this guy. And when once he did and found out what he was like, not only as a player, but as a person, it was a no-brainer. But this kid has a star written all over him. And it, we just hope that teams don't double team him all the time. So even if they do, he might still catch the ball. But I think if they do, it's going to open up for other guys. Like one of my favorite players from last year who had an incredible year that I wasn't expecting at all was Billy Kemp, the fourth. I fell in love with that guy. He caught everything, and he knew what to do with it once he got it too. And so he reminded me of one of those little New England Patriot, possession
receivers. Yeah. Yeah.
And, yeah. So, those two together, along with, some other receivers that really haven't made a name for themselves yet. A lot of potential there, a lot of explosiveness.
Odd observation, Lavelle Davis Jr., Trey Murphy, the third, and Billy Kemp, the fourth. We've got a lot of, got a lot of those, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
It turns out, and we have to remember when we're writing, we have to remember to write those too. And you did well there. Just, you know, we're in a podcast. You don't have to be that precise, but you still did. That's great. No, Davis, man, at 6'7", the difference maker he can be, and it kind of all goes together. You know, with the more you talk to the coaches, you find out, I mean, if an improved running game makes it harder for them to double him. Him, you know, being 6'7" and being 8 inches taller than the next guy, you know, and if they have to double him, then it opens up the running game. It opens up things for your slot receivers like Billy Kemp, your tight ends. You know, they got a big tight end transfer that came in just like last year. We had Tony Poljan. I'm losing the name on the tight end, but I know we have a stud tight end coming in along with Grant Mish coming back. So it opens up the middle for those guys. You know, Brennan Armstrong or whoever in the backfield at quarterback taking a snap in the Wildcat and or, you know, T- Thompson or Armstead also throwing the ball in those situations, it opens up either the run option game, the read option runs, or the quarterback draws. It all goes together, you know. And Virginia a couple years ago, the offense was pretty much, hey, Bryce, do something. And now there's all these pieces. You have that experience line. You've got a running game that Bronco is very confident in. You've got receivers who are tested. And you got a quarterback coming back for a second year, and he'll be back for another year after this. This is as good as a Virginia offense since, you got to think, since the middle of the years of the Yao Groh era.
Yeah, and, the fact that they do have that experienced offensive line, if those guys get the job done and you can control the line of scrimmage, you can do pretty much anything you want. And if you're running the ball well, that makes your play actions work so much better. It just opens up so much. So I agree. This could be the best offense since those early Groh years when they had so many weapons like Heath Miller and Matt Schaub and Marcus Higgins and
Wally Lundy, Alvin
Wally Peterman. Lundy. Yeah, there are so many guys.
Yeah, it's so many guys. It's taken a while to build, but Bronco has won while building, and now – let's see the fruits of the labor. And I liked what he said too about last year. Actually, maybe we'll work this in too, talking about the COVID year. It was interesting to me to hear him talk about how he felt like maybe Virginia left a couple of wins on the table, that maybe the holes in the secondary were maybe an issue. He's tried to address that, he said, in the offseason by putting more staff resources on the defensive side of the ball. But also we talked about how, you know, really they emphasized health and safety and well-being of the players last year. I don't want to say he said too much, like that they did that too much, but I think he maybe reflected on that and said, yeah, we kind of did. And you don't want to fault the guy for that. Gosh, it was a pandemic year. You're playing football in a pandemic year. But I think he feels like last year's team underachieved, and that this year's team, he said it a couple different times, this year's team should contend for a Coastal Division championship again.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the biggest work is on the defensive side of the ball. I thought they should not have lost to NC State last year at home. I don't think they should ever lose to Wake Forest, no matter where they play.
Right.
That would have made a big difference in the season. But they could have won the Miami game. The fact that they played down there for 2 years in a row didn't help. But I think a lot of this is going to fall on the defensive side of the ball if they can just shore some things up. The fact that so many of those seniors came back, I think maybe last season left a bad taste in some of their mouths, the way the defense performed. And you've got a lot of those guys. You can't have too much experience. That's for sure. That makes up for a lot of other things. And the fact that you got Cross coming back and Blunt and Grant and Mandy Alonzo, and that's just going to help tons. And Aaron Famui is going to be back after opting out. That's going to help plug some holes in the middle of that line. They lost some guys, but they have a chance to be pretty good. And they're going to have to be good because, I don't know how great this offense may be. We think it could be tremendous, but, you know, you can't depend on the offense to score 35 or 40 points a game. And when you're giving up just too many big plays, like last year, that was the biggest disappointment last year. They gave up so many big plays. And a lot of that was because of injury and still, they just gave up much more than I think they should have.
Yeah, Bronco said there were some schematic adjustments that they look back in retrospect they should have made in terms of accounting for issues in the secondary that they just didn't make. You know, they're addressing them. They know what they did wrong. So, I guess we're probably wrapping up here, Jerry. I would ask what we have coming. I think we're just dependent upon, let me look real quick at the transfer portal. Where are we right now?
We're having to watch it on the hour every hour.
We're up to 1,084 now. Marshall, New Mexico State, and Northern Arizona kids are in the, so I think it's gone up 11 since we started the podcast at 1 o'clock as we're recording this. So dependent upon that. Also, we have more spring football coming up. Anything else you're working on?
That's basically it, watching who may come in to basketball and where the guys that left are going to land. A lot of spring football stuff we'll be getting to for sure. And just some other odds and ends that I think will be of interest to Virginia fans in the long run.
Yeah, this is a fun part of the year. People don't realize this, but we work harder this time of year. When there's a game coming up, you preview the game, you cover the game, you write about the game, you preview the next game. You kind of know your schedule. We don't know. I mean, we know the spring practice schedule, and we have interviews, and thankfully, all the interviews we get to with the players and coaches during the week during spring practice. We don't get to go cover the practices this year again, but we do have those. But this basketball stuff, you've got to be on the go 24/7. You've got to be on Twitter. You've got to be on the message boards because that news breaks when it breaks. And so, yeah, I feel like I'm working harder. I know you are too, Jerry.
Oh, no question about it. And another reminder for the people that watch you and read you at Augusta Free Press and the ones who listen to me and read JerryRatcliffe.com is – we have some really good podcasts up there that in case they missed, they probably would like to go back and listen to them. And going all the way back to Ralph Sampson and Ricky Stokes previewing Virginia, Ohio, that part's over with, but both of those guys told so many stories about the old days that I think Virginia fans will enjoy. And the fact that we had Barry Parkhill on the other day sharing his thoughts on the season and college basketball in general. And Marcus Higgins just kind of blew a lot of people away with his insights, not just on football, but helping his players become complete people. So they'll be good workers, good husbands, good fathers in the future, no matter what their football future holds for them. And just talking about how he's trying to make a difference in the Charlottesville community. So I think even people that maybe aren't big, rabid football fans will enjoy that part of getting to know Marcus Higgins a little bit as well.
I've gotten a lot of positive feedback on the Marcus Higgins one. I mean, the Ralph and Ricky ones from a couple of weeks ago, yes, but the Marcus Higgins one has really blown up. A lot of folks have reached out to me to talk about how they're now big Marcus Higgins fans. Not that they weren't before. But, you know, it's one thing to root for a player that you see on a field or a coach you see, and then you get to kind of really get to know him through that podcast. Yeah, there are a lot more Marcus Higgins fans than there were just a few days ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad we could reveal that to them.
That's right. My impression after that was I want him to be a head coach somewhere soon, but I also don't want him to leave Virginia. So I'm torn. He's a Virginia guy through and through. He bleeds orange and blue, and you could feel that through the podcast. So I want the best for him, but I don't want to lose him either. So I'm really conflicted on Marcus, but no, thanks for mentioning that. Cause we have all those podcasts are timeless and they're good to listen. So get you, they're all about 45 minutes long or so. They'll get you through a good workout. If you're on a Peloton or you're out running or whatever this time of year, they'll get you through a workout and you'll learn a lot about UVA sports. So,
and something we didn't mention on that podcast with Marcus, probably because he wouldn't want to talk about it because he is so loyal to Virginia and said he never wants to leave here. I'm pretty sure he was approached by some pretty big time programs in the offseason who were looking to rebuild staffs and they wanted a good wide receivers coach, and his name popped up on all those lists. So I don't think he entertained the thought of any of those. So Virginia fans should feel lucky that they have a guy that loves the orange and blue so much.
That's right. That's right. Well, Jerry, thank you for your time. And all the listeners out there, go to JerryRatcliffe.com, go to AugustaFreePress.com to get the latest on Virginia sports and more. Thanks for your time today, and we'll talk to you again soon.